Good evening, ladies and gentlemen.
You didn't wait for the countdown.
Where's
the countdown? I did the countdown.
All right.
And I did it Wayne's World style, where we're 5-4-3.
Wayne's World.
No, we started. I did 5-4-3, and then I did the silent 2-1, and then I gave you the points. So this is why we need to be on video.
All right, that's fair. Your camera doesn't work, though, which we have already talked about.
Well, it doesn't.
Talk to us about your camera, Brian.
We bombed the intro. It seems to be Brooks and Raymer. I'm sorry, right. Guests.
Friends.
Hey, good evening. Welcome to the Brooks and Raymer podcast, in which two old friends, Brian Brooks and Paul Raymer, discuss whatever we feel like. Could be sports, could be modern day events, could be life updates. Welcome into the inner sanctum of our friendship.
That's right.
Is that a difficult intro? You know, I don't know why we struggle with that.
That's great.
Why do we struggle with that?
I'm going to cut off the front part of this and just start there.
Let me tell you about my problems. I got a lot of problems with you people, and now is a good time. Do we got a solid hour and a half blocked up just for me to talk about my problems?
Problems. Yeah.
All right. I'm frustrated with technology. I'm what has sometimes been called a Luddite. I've tried to use the camera feature. This little white light is on, indicating that the camera is on, not actually on, or if it is, it's not indicating anywhere. So I got a problem with that.
Just for the listeners here, I cannot see Brian. His camera is not actually on, and for some reason he's freaking out about a white light. So
the little white light that indicates that the camera is on. So I mean, someone in Chechnya is looking at me right now. Watching me.
Yep.
You're in a chair. A bug
and it's broadcasting to Chechnya. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a problem. Someone told me that we had some audio, like weird clicks and noises in the background. So I went out and bought a new headset, a wireless headset. Your boy's gone wireless. I don't mind some of the wireless, but sometimes I do. Sometimes I'm out on a run and my like 3.5-year-old Bluetooth headsets, they just kind of bug out. So I think when you're on a run, I think corded headphones. That's what I think.
That's a terrible idea. Corded headphones are the worst, man. Like,
how is it a terrible idea? We ran with corded headphones, not for the entirety of humanity's existence, but for a solid 3 decades.
We didn't have better technology. Now we have better technology.
It's an inconsistent better technology. What is the issue with corded headphones?
It gets wrapped up on your arm or like
on your arm,
up your sleeve, depending on where your like iPad or your iPod's at. You know, like it's kind of.
So you're saying you have no issues with your cordless headphones when you're running? That's what you're telling me.
Never.
They never lose battery halfway through a marathon.
They lost battery after like
walked into that one. Walked right into that one. Oh my god!
That's your proof that because I was responding to text with Siri, a very nice AI.
Proof that you're a liar. Proof that you're a liar.
Okay.
Oh, Paul, I've never had any problems with my cordless headphones except for that one time when they ran out of battery. With an hour left in a marathon.
You've been setting this up on me for 5 minutes, haven't you? You knew this was coming.
I like that you think I've got some grand strategy.
I
just walk into things. Yeah. All right, Paul. It's Sunday night.
We both had
successful weekends. We both have work in the morning. Wait, do you have work in the morning?
I think I'm taking the tomorrow off, actually.
You unemployed bum.
Well,
what kind of member of society?
So, you know, okay, I'm going to, before we get into it, I've been a little sick this weekend and I've been sequestered to my house yesterday and today. So I'm taking tomorrow off to rest up, I think. So
to rest up from not leaving your house.
I've been sick and not feeling well, Brian. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right. So, okay.
What's
friends and family. We apologize. We're clearly off our game. Unlike our typical routine where we nail the intro, we stumbled on our faces. Can we just jump to our what we're good at?
What are we good at?
If you have to ask, I don't even think I should tell you. What are you drinking, brah? What are you drinking?
What am I drinking? due to my, I'm not drinking alcohol right now. I actually have.
Oh my God. Are we recording this?
I'm
so sorry. That's a shame.
I actually have a nice electrolyte drink here to replenish my fluids, as they say, you know?
That's a euphemism. I mean, literally you're replenishing fluids, but that's whenever someone says I got to replenish, it's, there's always like a wink, right? Like something that you either do or don't.
There's no wink.
Well, then we don't want to hear the rest of the story. Yeah.
Okay.
It's
what are you drinking? An electrolyte.
I am drinking, I started my night off with a lovely little classic cocktail. Harkens back to a simpler time of plastic jugs and when soda only came in like six choices. I started my night off with a classic 7 and 7, a gentleman's cocktail. I do. Yeah. It's home. It's a home base. Gentleman's cocktail, international cocktail, bringing about the finest of the citrus based, soda brands.
Now what's the mix there? Is it 50-50? Like how much 7 up? How much?
That's a dealer's choice. It was the last, scrapple of the bottle. So the mixture, the ratio in this case was, turn the Seagram 7 bottle upside down and then fill the rest of the glass with 7 Up.
Yeah. Okay. Fair.
So contrary to popular opinion, it was not, finely measured out like to the milliliter, amount. So that was the dinner beverage. And then the podcast beverage is something that I believe is called a Green Point. And so it's a twist on a Manhattan. So 2.25 ounce, I'm using a Whistlepig rye. I opened my new bottle of yellow chartreuse. So 1 ounce yellow chartreuse, sweet vermouth, touch of absinthe, touch of Peychaud's bitters, stir in a mixing glass to chill, strain the ice into a cup. And we're now about to have our first sip.
Okay, let's hear it. Take the sip. What's the ruling?
Well, I gotta tell you, there's worse things in this world.
There's worse things in this world. Now, what's the yellow chartreuse do? Just what is it? A drop of it? What's it doing?
Well, I tell you what, it opens the door, it brings you in, it sits you down for a nice hot cup of chili. that will warm you up.
Are you Sam Worthington? What?
That is a euphemism for spirit forward.
Whew. Okay.
It's called an attitude improvement. And I tell you, my attitude was just fine, but it just got better.
Whew. That's great. That's great. So this is why you were 15 minutes late to the podcast, because you made that cocktail, is what it sounds like.
Oh, man.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. Brian, while you're enjoying
I feel like you're trying to rush my Zen relax.
No, you're really enjoying it. I'm happy for you. I'm just as happy that you're enjoying it. We're all happy.
Well, I wish you were feeling better. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were not feeling great.
That's okay.
Yeah. Do you know about
– but it's okay.
No, it's the NBA playoffs. Everybody – there's nobody at 100%.
Everybody's a little
no
hurt.
Such
it's
thing.
My flu game, you know? So.
Are you familiar with the chartreuse phenomenon?
Not really. I think it's a. I actually have no idea what it is. I've heard the word before. No idea.
Perchance, you heard the word in relation to the color, which is really just green. All right. Some people will tell you chartreuse is a color. We can just say green, right? Like.
Green.
I defy any of our listeners, especially the stereotypically male listeners, to distinguish between green and chartreuse.
Okay. No, they look the same. Got it.
Yeah. So chartreuse is a euphemism for green. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. In any case, I don't know if the name of the color came first or the name of the liquor. Legendarily, which is to say it's an old wives' tale, the liquor comes from a Belgian monastery. It comes in two forms, yellow and green. And circa 2011, some Manhattan bartender created a drink called The Naked and Famous, which uses yellow chartreuse. It became instantly famous, and ergo, the worldwide demand for chartreuse skyrocketed, but it is still just made by, allegedly, some Belgian monks who don't give a shit what capitalistic demands of supply are. Or demand. And so they essentially never increased production. And in fact, according to rumor, decreased production. So now it is legendarily difficult to actually obtain a bottle of either the yellow or the green. I was unsuccessful in the entirety of Oregon and the entirety of San Luis Obispo. Our friend Donnie, apparently after calling to six different places in the Bay Area, did manage to obtain a bottle of yellow and a bottle of green, which he gifted me in exchange for monetary goods. And now I am the proud owner of a bottle of yellow and green, which I feel is my duty-bound honor to protect and only dole out in quantifiable sips in exchange for friendship behavior.
I'm going to be honest, man. I didn't know I was in for a history lesson today. I feel smarter. I didn't know anything about the chartreuse.
Yeah, a lot of people tell me after I talked to him for about a minute, a lot of people tell me, thank you. You have increased.
I feel like I just watched the History Channel, you know, like a real quick one, or maybe like one of those history TikToks or something.
So, yeah. Here's a funny gag. I was at a bar, had this cocktail, said, that's great. The bartender gave me the recipe thing. And then it has chartreuse on it and I couldn't find it anywhere. So I go back a month later and I asked her, where do you get chartreuse? And she said, oh yeah, you can't, you're screwed. You can't actually make that cocktail at home. But joke's on her. I have a friend in the Bay Area whose wife called like six different places and I got it. But this is a classic example of you can't have your cake and eat it too. I have the bottles of chartreuse. If I use the bottles of chartreuse to make the cocktails that I really like, then ergo, I will no longer have the bottles of chartreuse.
Well, I think you should use them. That's the point, right? It's not, they're not that hard to find that like you, they're collector's items, right? So
no, I keep thinking the law of like capitalism is going to prevail here and some alternative supplier is going to make a, you know.
Yeah. Why is there not another chartreuse supplier? I don't know.
Okay. This is the Brooks and River podcast. This is not, you know, the mixology podcast.
We've talked too much about it. So
you're right. Yeah. What are we at? Like 2 minutes in, 3 minutes in?
12 minutes. Yeah. 12 minutes. Right. How is slow? You've been down there. For what, a month now?
Am I the reason we go off on these little tangents? The reason that we go long?
Do you see it now? You see it a little bit, right?
Yeah, I'm not entirely unaware.
I entertain it. I do.
Yeah. Okay. Let me tell you about slow. Let me tell you about San Luis Obispo. First of all, and as a Caucasian American, this is the element that embarrasses me. Founded by Spanish settlers. Obviously, there were Native Americans here first. Founded by Spanish missionary settlers who wanted to spread Catholicism. Point being, many of the towns around here have a Spanish language name.
San Luis Francisco.
That's Spanish Angela. In origin. Arroyo Grande, which Spanish pronunciation would be Arroyo Grande. I've heard an adult male say Arroyo Grande. there's Paso Robles. R-O-B-L-E-S. The locals say Paso Robles, which is a real cringe to the tongue. San Luis Obispo, as opposed to San Luis Obispo. There are some local pronunciations that will really strain your Spanish ear. But that being said, it's a lovely little city. It's a small city. It's a college town. It's a farming town. It's a wine town. It's beach adjacent. The beach is like 6 miles away. So it's a fun little combination of all of these little things. And it's got quite a bit of money, which is to say it's fairly expensive. But, you know, all the nice places in California are fairly expensive. So that's not terribly unique in itself. It's cool, man. It's fun.
We're enjoying it down here. A lot of college kids when you guys are going out, or like,
we don't go out with, there are college kids around. When we go out, apparently the summers are really nice because I guess that's when the college kids go home.
Yes. Yeah. One of those like, it's great when the kids aren't here.
Yeah. I've hit that age where my tolerance, level for, you know, fuck off 22-year-olds, is diminishing considerably. But
not long ago that we were those people.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. No, but yeah. I was a classy one. I was one of the good ones. And I'm sure no one else
disagree. A lot of people disagree.
Well, we don't have to talk about that. But no, the point is we're enjoying our time slow. I've been with the new job for I guess about 5 weeks. It's going well. I'm enjoying it. It's kind of going back home to home base for me professionally.
But just listen to you talk about that versus your last job, right?
Oh yeah, no. The last job,
I'm enjoying it. Like you never said that once. I feel like
no, not once. No, the last job I knew after like less than a week, I was like, oh, this is this is not a health change. This is a healthy change. Yeah, yeah.
The Brooks household, things are looking up.
Yeah, everything's turning up. Well, not no house.
Coming up, Brian. We met like 2 weeks ago to golf. What else happened?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of those life lessons about Portland, my golf clubs are stolen. So I went out and procured some new golf clubs. We drove halfway between us and played golf on the California coast. We didn't actually put any balls actually in the water.
We weren't that bad.
We don't know the final resting place of every single ball we hit.
There were some houses that may or may not have gotten hit. You know?
It is unlikely that we killed any whales or dolphins. I don't think any of our golf balls ended up in the salt water, but yeah, our confidence intervals, it's still pretty high.
Yeah.
It was the first time I played golf in the year. And how did I do, Paul? You tell the people how I did.
Well, Brian, you beat me fairly handily for the first time in years. Yeah.
Not a surprising result for the golf champion of 2024.
Yeah. Sure.
Our routine listeners are, I'm sure, distinctly aware of whom the golf champion of 2024 was. February,
it still is, Brian Brooks. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've played every weekend. Haven't played this weekend, but I'm trying to play once a week.
Are you serious?
Yeah, trying to play once a week. Missed this week, but
you bastard.
Yeah, gotta keep the swing up, you know. So
yeah. All right,
coming back strong next time we play.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to a topic at hand. Okay. I always thought it was a very cool friendship move that you did, and you did this 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago. You became an authentic, actual to God Kansas City Royals fan, and I just thought, as a friend, I thought that was really cool. And I'm telling you, here in these NBA playoffs, I'm telling you, I'm here for these Indianapolis Pacers. I've watched.
I know you've always semi-rooted for him. This is a turning for you, I feel like.
I don't think I have not missed. I didn't watch much of the first round, but I have not missed a game in the second round.
They've been good.
Yeah, well, the first two were great games, and then it was tough to watch the fourth quarters because the Knicks were just they were killer, and by that I just mean
Pacers just gave it up.
The Knicks had a knack for putting their foot on the throat and just finishing it in the way that the Pacers didn't. But that's what it looks like on the road. That's not necessarily indicative of the Knicks and the Pacers. That's indicative of road and home teams. So I don't think you need to draw any grand conclusions from that. Those two examples, the Pacers were in it in games 1 and 2, and they just kind of let it go away. But I've been here for every single game.
I was going to say, that's how I felt after games 1 and 2. Like, I was disappointed because, like, yeah, there was some bitching about calls, but really I felt like they could have not should have, but they could have won both. And so, like, because of that, I wasn't stressed terribly. Like, it felt like we could win games 3 and 4, you know, and then sure shit, you know.
So, you know, the NBA and especially the Pacers on an infinitely higher level than I do. What's your outlook for the rest of this series?
Oh, I thought about this. I mean, Brian, we didn't do a ton of prep for this, so I didn't expect this question exactly. However, I've got a good answer. So I believe either the Pacers win in 6. Okay, ooh. So mind you, it's going to game 5 right now.
So if the Pacers take take game 5 in New York on Tuesday,
and
game 6 will be in Indianapolis.
And I know think what they finished it in Indy. Yeah.
So okay.
Because here's the deal is right now OG's injured. Basically, since OG has been injured, the Knicks haven't won. I think that's a big deal. I think there's a high probability that this is how the series is going to go just because of how, you know, this isn't the same Knicks team we even saw in game 1.
Then,
so that is, to me, a likely probability. The other one is that it is just one of those home team wins the game series. We go over there, they win. They come here, we win, and then it goes to game seven, and the Knicks close us out in Madison Square Garden. I think the other potential.
Yeah, this game five is going to have a lot of sway. And that's on Tuesday, right?
Yeah, it's on Tuesday. Probably going to get to watch like the last half of it.
You're going to be at work. You're going to be at work for part of
it. That's the problem with these East Coast games, man. They start at like 4 here sometimes.
Yeah. So let me ask you this. And there's nothing the Pacers did wrong. But in the first round, they played a team that had previously won the championship, who was missing their absolute best player, one of the top three players in the world. He was gone. They were missing, for the most part, their second best player. He was gone for like one or two games and was injured for the rest. Their like fourth best player got ejected for one game. And so basically they were really playing, and I think you'd admit this, they were playing a shell of the Bucks. And here they are playing the Knicks. Knicks' second best player is gone.
Julius Knicks, Randall.
Julius Randle. Bogdanovich is gone.
Their backups. Best player would be OG, and he's gone now.
Well, he played 2.5 games at least. Their backup center's gone. Their star, Brunson. He's clearly a bastard to play against, but he's also clearly kind of hampered. I guess what I'm really saying is the Pacers didn't do anything wrong, but they're also clearly playing against some teams that are not nearly at their full stature. So, does that change the process? Like,
for me, no. At all. Because I mean, I know it's here's how it goes, right? It's very easy for every team, you know, like. People hate on the Lakers bubble series because it's in the bubble. People hate on some of the Warriors series where the Warriors titled because like they went through injured teams, right? Or like
right.
Or this happens all the time. Yeah. Every time somebody wins a championship, like they're probably going to have some sort of lucky path, right? Like very rarely does it. Not to say the Pacers are going to win the championship, right? But like if for whatever reason Boston wins it all. People are going to be like, Boston didn't play anybody, you know, like, they played a Jimmy Butler-less Miami team. Now they're playing a Cleveland team that they're clearly better than. And then like, maybe they get to play a completely defeated Knicks or a Pacers team that has no business beating them. So like,
The NBA playoffs have this weird historical story arc where young talented teams do well in the regular season and then really struggle in the playoffs because it just historically seems to be one of those things that you have to fail for one or two or three years before you're deemed ready to succeed. And the Pacers haven't done that yet.
No, the Pacers haven't done that yet. But like, I do think that they can make it through this series. And then, you know, I don't think they're going to beat the Celtics, but this is way farther than, you know, getting to the Eastern Conference Finals is a fucking great accomplishment, you know.
All right. So, final question for you on Pacers.
Sure.
So here you sit, second round of the NBA playoffs. You're tied 2-2. Is this season, as of today, without anything else happening in the future, is this season today, right now, already a successful season?
Oh yeah. I mean, think about it this way, man. I didn't even know, as a Pacer fan, I did not even know the draft lottery happened today. I did when I turned on before the game this morning and I was like, oh shit, the draft lottery. That is, as a fan, that's a good place to be in. Think about it.
There are a lot of years where you were looking forward to this day and was kind of on a wire about where the Pacers were going to select in the first.
I'd say like at least three or four times in the last 5 years. And like, I always kept hoping that we were going to be the Atlanta Hawks. Like the Atlanta Hawks just jumped up and got the number one pick and from like way back, you know, the Pacers never did that. But like, anyway, I watched this NBA lottery briefly because it was before the Pacer game. And I like thought to myself, I was like, well, first of all, we traded our pick, but even if we had it, we don't even have to worry about this. We're worrying about game five of the fucking Eastern Conference semifinals, dude. Like, that's a great, successful season.
Yeah. No, I'm with you 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
How are you liking Siakam? Do you hope they re-sign Siakam?
I hope, and I strongly believe they will. So that trade to me screamed of, they had some sort of back store discussion with Siakam that he said, you know, assuming XYZ, I'll re-sign with you. There's no way they made that trade without some assurances. So
just for a 3-month rental.
Yeah. And he seems to like it here. He's in the playoffs again. He's a big part of them. Like,
is he, maybe except for Miles Turner, he's your second best player. Is he what you want in a second best player?
Yeah, honestly. Yeah. Like he is one, a couple of those Milwaukee games, he won himself. Like he had like 2 or 3 games in a row where he had over 30 points. He struggled from the free throw line, but like, dude, Halliburton has not been an A+. Only scored 20 points today, and Siakam is sitting there averaging at least I think 22 in the playoffs. Like, what a great guy to have, even if you have to overpay for him. Yeah. You know.
Final. So we went for a run. I came back. I turned the game on, I think, towards the end of the second quarter, and the Pacers were up by like 25. What is a game like today where you go into it stressed and you're kind of freaked out, and then in the first 10 minutes, you just build a lead, a humongous lead, like an ass-kicking lead, and then for the rest of it, you just coast and you grow, you build that lead, and the Knicks throw in the towel in the middle of the third quarter. I mean, tell me what that experience was like today.
Well, I wanted to watch every minute of it, which I did.
And then you got bored. You got bored as shit, didn't you?
I did get a little bored, but I there was some sort of record for the biggest playoff win. I'm not sure if we got it at the end, but I wanted to get that. I thought that would be a fun record to have. I was watching and hoping that New York Knicks left their starters in and they, like, I don't know, pulled a calf muscle or like broke their leg. I'm a straight fan, man. If I'm not gonna, I don't want them to die. But if they have an Achilles injury, I'm not going to be upset, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway,
it was a good game to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could, what was fun was you could tell how bored the announcers were with six minutes left in the fourth quarter. And the announcers were like, we've got 6 more minutes of this.
They're like, does anybody know who the bench players are? You know, the Pacers put in guys that honestly played a big rotation in the regular season, but I hadn't seen much of. And the Knicks were like, we don't even have 10 players.
Yeah, it was fun. That was fun.
Yeah.
I do enjoy this time of year. The NBA playoffs are fun. If you have an opportunity to make it part of your life, it's fun because every night there's 1 or 2 games that really matter. And the more you care, the more you're rewarded. And I think that's the thing about life. The more you care, the more you're rewarded. Sometimes, not always. You know, sometimes the more you care, the more you get kicked in the teeth. But that's life.
I have a question for you, Brian. All right. Danny, the girlfriend, the boo, asked me Friday. So I had a date night Friday, and I didn't watch the game. But she was like, can you tell me, like, why do you care? And not like from not from a critical standpoint, but like she just wanted me to describe like why
the heart and the emotion,
right?
Why it's part of your identity. Why it's part of your identity.
Yeah. And I was trying to describe it like, well, I'm from there. Mm-hmm. I've identified with this team. I know all the things about them. And she's like, okay, sure. But like,
yeah, that's facts. Why? Yeah. That's not what she's asking.
Yeah. And it's hard. I don't know. I don't have a good answer. Do you have a good answer?
Yeah, that's tougher than you think. For me, it's like a lifetime friend. And sometimes that friend doesn't perform the way you want them to. And, you know, and that's life. Sometimes you've got people in your life who, I don't know, to really stress this analogy, have like chemical dependency issues or make bad financial choices or whatever the case, right? Like you don't get to choose your family. And to some extent, you can choose your friends. But it's this thing that's been in my life. And I've lived and died, the successes and the failures. And it's just kind of a constant. And so me personally, I've moved around from Kansas to Alaska to Virginia and Japan and Pennsylvania and Virginia again. And I don't really know, I'm not in contact with anyone that I grew up with. And I've got cousins that I talk to once a year. And the point being, I'm not terribly connected to anything that I grew up with, except that I grew up with the Royals and the Chiefs and the Jayhawks. And for me, that ties it back to this thing that's always been in my life.
And it's always been there for you.
Yeah. In a way that your parents aren't always there, right? You know, sometimes. Right.
Yeah, neither of us have had the same people in our lives the whole time, right? So.
Yeah, but there's always been, you know, in the spring the Royals are going to play, and in the fall the Chiefs are going to play, and sometimes they're bad, and sometimes, like, for your own mental health, you have to check out because, you know, this thing that you love doesn't love you back, and whatever the case. But that's, I think, why it's important to me. And also, that's just one element. There's a community element. It's one of the cooler experiences of my life. I think I was 19. I was in Toronto in the spring, and the Raptors and the Maple Leafs were in the playoffs. And that city, every single night, that city went out, and it felt electric. Every single night, the Maple Leafs were playing, and then the next night, the Raptors were playing. And that's when Vince Coleman was there. And, people were just on. Like, everyone was, like, you go into a bar, and everyone's your friend, and they're buying you stuff, and you're buying stuff. And it felt like a community experience. And it's not political. There's no red and blue and that bullshit. And it's just everyone is out there to be with other people and to live in that moment.
Connection, right? To other people.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Like, I don't regret really too much my life, but I have to think to have been in Kansas City in October of 2014 and 2015, I have to think that was just a special, special month for those people there. And obviously, like, every city in America is kind of, even, you know, small colleges, right? A college goes on a run in the NCAA tournament. Like, to be in that town when you're the Cinderella story, it's got to just kind of make your hair stand up a little bit. If you are wired in that way, and if you're not wired in that way, then it's not an issue and it's not a thing. And you're going to get your hair is going to stand up for other reasons, whatever it takes to wake you up in the morning. I don't know, but for me, when I was a kid, I watched a basketball game once, and I thought KU's on national television, and they're talking about how great Kansas is, and look, I'm an 8-year-old kid in Kansas, and even 8-year-olds in Kansas understand that there's really not a lot great about,
you knew about
the state of Kansas. Yeah. I thought, well, this is unique. They're actually saying something good about us. Let me kind of figure this out. And then, I don't know, man. It's a hard, you're right, it's a hard question to answer, but it's going to be a part of me. It's going to be a part of me from when I was 8 to when I was 80, when I'm 80. And that's to some extent.
I feel similar. I think you described it better than I did. So I appreciate that.
With that emotional connection comes heart, or it comes harm and hurt and pain too.
In 2013,
Jovan Belcher was a Chiefs linebacker, and he obviously had some traumatic brain injuries. At the end of a bad season where the Chiefs lost a whole bunch of games, he to put it bluntly, he murdered the wife of his infant daughter at like 4 a.m. on a Sunday morning. And then he drove to the Chiefs practice facility and committed suicide in the parking lot in front of the head coach and the general manager. And then the Chiefs played the next day. And that's when I checked out. The fact that they played the game the next day, that's when I said, you know what, this is not a healthy connection for me. And I didn't really watch the Chiefs for the next year.
I didn't realize that. I mean, I remember that happening, but they were kind of garbage at that point, right?
Well, that's when they got the first overall draft pick. They drafted a left tackle. But that was for me, that was the point where I was like, you know, this social thing that can be so valuable can also be so harmful. And it's not on me to tell someone else how to process grief. There's a ton of healthy and unhealthy ways to process grief. But for me, playing a game the next day after that kind of event was beyond the pale. And,
too much, yeah.
But then I came back to it, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Spring comes around and life comes renewed. And
I'm going to ask you, cause you talked about how much of a Royals fan you are and how you converted me. So let's talk about the Royals this year. So a little bit,
fun this year.
On last year, right?
I don't know why we would have. That would have been silly on our part.
Episode.
Oh, the last episode. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But since then, I mean, they're still doing pretty good. They're not hot, but they're almost tied for first in their division, right?
They're a half game back. AL Central was regarded as the worst division in baseball. And it actually turns out they've got three teams that are pretty competitive. The fucking Minnesota Twins were doing poorly, and then they won like 12 in a row, like bastards. And so they went from like five games under 500 to being like seven games over 500, which is not courteous of them. But the AL Central is a surprisingly competitive division. The Royals signed two or three veteran starting pitchers, and it turns out they're pretty great. We caught an ace named Cole Reagans in a trade last year for nothing. So we got an ace, like a top five AL pitcher, just for a nothing from the Texas Rangers last year because they thought he was too injured to be any valuable.
That's Cole Reagans, right? That's
your Cole Reagans. About. Yeah, yeah.
Talk to me about Seth Lugo. He looks
one of the veterans. Yeah, he's leading the American League in earned run average, ERA.
And he's old, right?
No, he's like 32 or 33. But yeah, for starting pitchers in baseball, that's considered old. Okay. We signed these two veteran pitchers, Michael Wacha and Seth Lugo. And Michael Wacha is doing okay, but Seth Lugo's lighting the world on fire. The starting pitching is, I'll say, borderline great. The defense is borderline great. There's some positions right and left field that are just average to below average, but third base, shortstop, second base, first base, catcher, center field, defense has been great. So we're in the top two or three in starting pitchers. We're in the top two or three in defense. Offense has been average to occasionally above average. I have to tell you, Salvador Perez is having probably the best start to any season in his potentially Hall of Fame career.
Averaging 330.
He was last week. He was leading the league in home runs. Was tied for the league in home runs. Leading the league in average and leading the league in RBI, and that's spectacular. I don't throw that term, potentially Hall of Fame career. That's not hyperbole. That's not something you just offhand throw out.
No, dude. I think he is most assuredly a Hall of Fame career player.
The Royals have been in existence. Yeah, they've been around since the early 60s, and they have one single Hall of Fame player. And Salvador Perez building a case to be the second one.
Because think about it, too. He has played this long as a catcher, and usually catchers' careers are not this long, right? They're pretty shortened.
Well, so we'll still call him a catcher. He gets a lot of games at first base and a lot of games at DH. I don't know that he's even going to start half their games. And you know what? That's fine. That's great. If he started half their games, then that's a travesty on the manager's part. But yeah, he's still the catcher. But he's becoming a first baseman DH too. And that's fine. That's how he's supposed to age. That's what's supposed to happen. That's not a problem. They're fun. There are seven or so games over 500. Yesterday we went to a farmer's market. Some guy is wearing a Royals shirt. I talked to him for about a minute and a half. Here's the point. He had watched the highlights from the game the night before. We went into the ninth inning down 1-0. We hit a two-run home run. We ended up winning 2-1 in the ninth inning over the Angels. And I'm walking around random California town on Saturday morning, and this guy had watched the highlights the night before. That's how you know this team is different.
Fun.
The guy had actually watched the highlights. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, all right, there's a fan that's in another town with me. Yeah.
Yeah. So baseball has a way, because it's daily, because it's you play every single day, unlike, any other sport, really. It has a way of kind of either bringing a community together or just kind of snuffing the life out of a community. I do at some point, this is the last season that baseball we played in Oakland in the Coliseum. I've never been there. I want to go see it before it's gone, because it's one of those, remnants of a bygone type thing. And before I lose my chance, I want to go watch a baseball game with you guys up there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've been looking. I'm actually thinking about going to a Giants game next weekend with D, but we'll see. But yeah, the A's are easy to get to from where I am. So
I have to think the Giants game in Oakland is going to be the one game where they sell more than, 10,000 seats.
Well, they do. They both, when the A's play at the Giants, it's a big game. When the Giants play at the A's, it's like sold out, actually. So,
yeah, that tracks. Yeah, that makes sense. Here's what's going to be embarrassing, and the A's deserve this, is when they go to Las Vegas. First of all, they're not going to get one of these tippy top three stadiums in all of baseball. They're going to get, I think, a very much average, run of the mill, bleh, like mid stadium. And they're not going to have any fan base, and I don't think they're not going to have a raucous home crowd until they earn it, and that could be a while.
Yeah, you know they're going to Sacramento for like 2 or 3 years, right?
Yeah, they're going to play. Yeah,
they're going to be like the Sacramento A's. I don't know if they changed their name or what, but they're playing in a minor league ballpark.
They should just be like the West Coast A's, the West Coast Athletics. Brought to you by Oakland, Sacramento, Podesta, Mount Shasta. Very briefly Nogales, but that was just a weekend thing. Nogales, Arizona.
They're like a carnival. They're a roaming carnival. Livermore this weekend. They're playing at the local high school.
And then eventually they'll end up in like semi-rural Las Vegas.
Poor A's fans. I'm glad I didn't get too into them. When I moved here, I was like, I'm going to be an A's fan. And then quickly they were like, oh, they're leaving. I guess I'm not going to do that. So,
yeah. Well, you know, as a Kansas City fan, I have to tell you, I knew a long time ago that the A's were going to leave Oakland. And do you know how I know that? It's because they left Kansas City. They were the team in Kansas City before the Royals. And they left Kansas City. And then the Major League Baseball said, okay, you can have an expansion team. And thus the Royals were born. There's your history. Yeah.
And leavers.
They are leavers. They were in Philadelphia before that. They predate the Phillies.
It's a bunch of leavers.
They are, unfortunately, a franchise with some grand history, but they are not showing
it. What were they called in Kansas City?
The Athletics. They've always been the Athletics. Okay. They were the Philadelphia Athletics before that. They had a manager.
They're going to stay and be the Las Vegas Athletics. Like, they're not changing their name or anything.
No, they had a manager named Connie Mack. Who's in the history books. He's a famous baseball guy, Connie Mack. What do you think if you had a kid, right? This is a fictional scenario, obviously, but if you came to your significant other and you said, I'd like to name our kid Connie Mack Brooks or Connie Mack Raymer. How do you think that would go over?
Strong veto. You know how there's like, you know, the couples that are like, okay, you get five vetoes. I get five. Yeah. Like it would be an extra veto. Like she would be like, it's not one of my five.
That's not one of my official fives.
Yeah, it doesn't even count.
No, it'd be a hyphen, Connie-Mac. So not first name, middle name, but that's the full first name.
Sure.
Connie Mac.
You think that's better? Connie-Mac?
Yeah. It's kind of like you've heard of like instant macaroni and cheese. Well, this is Connie Mac. Not instant Mac, Connie Mac.
Connie Mac Brooks. I want you to tell Miranda that. Say, you know what?
No, she already knows. Really... she knows my first choice in, you know, fictional children's names. Again, I don't really want to have a kid, but you go through these things in your head. Here's what it would be. Guy Brooks. How does that sound?
He sounds like a secret agent, doesn't he?
Guy Brooks.
He's good at basketball.
Guy Brooks knows how to play poker and is also smart enough not to.
Yeah, no. Guy Brooks is picking up the hottest woman in the bar.
Yeah, Guy Brooks. That's a name.
Yeah. Feels like you're screwing the world out of a great name.
You know what? I don't need to give this to some fictional kid. Right? Like there's instruments.
Why don't you be Guy Brooks?
There's legal instruments to affect this, to manifest this destiny. Why can't Guy Brooks
change your name from Brian to Guy? I actually kind of like this.
So then the name of the podcast would be the Guy Brooks and Paul Raymer. Guy Brooks and Raymer. You don't get the first name because
it probably wouldn't even be my first name. It shouldn't be on there. The Guy Brooks and Raymer podcast.
It would just be Guy Brooks and Friends.
The guy, I would get demoted. It's just the Guy Brooks show.
Yeah, Guy Brooks, the Guy Brooks show. God, that snaps. Oh, that saps.
Sounds good. Sounds like a late night show, doesn't it?
I got a future in this. If I just pull that trigger.
I've never
gotten a tattoo, so I guess I'm hesitant to make these life altering decisions.
I mean, names, you go back and forth, right? You change the name, you don't like it. Not a big deal. Yeah. You go back.
Well, I'm sure you pay like a $40, you know, filing fee with the court.
I'm sure there's some sort of fee. You got to get a new, you know, social maybe. I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Or I don't know. Maybe you just, you know, tell people, you know what? On your driver's license.
I'm about to get a new California driver's license. What if I legally change my name and just don't tell anybody and just let Miranda continue to call me Brian, even though she never sees the new ID and it's actually Guy Brooks?
You legally change your name to Guy Brooks and never tell her.
Yeah, but what's the point though, right? Because you're going to do it to own the name of Guy Brooks, right? You're not going to do it to hide it. You're going to do it to champion it. Okay.
Yeah, she's. I think I like the idea of you just slide it into her by you start getting mail in the name of Guy Brooks. She starts seeing the mail and stuff like that. Later. You get a new email address, guybrooks@gmail.com.
Yeah. Do you know what? He fucks. Yeah. That Guy Brooks, he fucks. Yeah.
He does.
Yeah.
You should. I would make the email now. Make that email now. All right.
Okay.
I think we're there.
We're there. Yeah. We didn't get into the podcast for 12 minutes. What's our time?
We're actually only at 46 minutes. We're doing pretty good.
Perfect. We've been told, we've gotten notes. I've been told, you know what, Brian? Maybe you had a few too many cocktails. You know what, Brian? Maybe there's too many chord noises in the background. Look, I had one cocktail before this, and I got new headphones. Your comments, your notes, you're being incorporated.
There we go. Look at this. Good podcast. Appropriate length.
We're keeping it to approximately 45 minutes. That's what our people will ask for, and that's what we're delivering.
We're going to give it to him.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's a show, folks. And we'll catch up later. All right.
The Guy Brooks and Friends podcast. One more successful episode.